Episode 36 of Drunk on Comics, where my liver is dead, but the only reason why I go on is because I have a ghost liver. Like Spider-Man has Peter Parker as a ghost.
You sandbagging son of a bitch.
He's a ghost, people. He's a ghost.
We'll get to that. Oh, God. Well, welcome everybody to Drunk on Comics.
This thanks, Derek.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. Yeah. And Matt.
What's up?
And Tony.
Ghost liver says hi.
Yeah, well, I hope your ghost liver gets exercised. And I don't mean, well, actually, your liver has gotten exercise, but at least a healthy fucking workout. But this is our podcast about comic books, conventions, nerdly other nuggets of fun, a little bit of gratuitous public nerdity along the way. We're going to get things kicked off right away with Off the Shelf. This is brought to you again by Inter Comics. It's inter-comics.com. Find them online for all your comic book needs. They are a comic book retailer online located in the UK. But if you don't live there, don't worry. They ship worldwide. They also have awesome blogs. They have great prices on their shit, too. So go check them out, inter-comics.com. Here's your warning. We're going to talk about books that came out this week, and we're probably going to spoil the shit out of them.
Yeah. We're going to spoil
Tony, saying Peter Parker is a ghost.
Like Tony spoiling our debate on whether or not Peter Parker's a ghost.
Or like Tony spoiling a woman's dreams of actually being satisfied.
Oh. I think Derek's bitter. Derek might be a little bitter right now.
Yes. So if you haven't read your books, now's a good time to hit pause and read them and come back. Otherwise, just be warned, because that's as far as you're getting for a warning. So I think I'll kick it off this week, and I read Doctor Who number one from IDW.
Hmm. Why?
Well, okay.
Why?
Not Doctor Why, Doctor what? Who. So, hold on
when
one second.
When did you read this?
When? Doctor when?
How did you read it? The better question is, why did you read it?
No, the better question is, what did I read? Ooh. What? Doctor what?
Who?
Doctor what I read is written by Scott and David Tipton. Art is by Simon Fraser, and colors were by Gary Caldwell. And I've been wanting to jump into a Doctor Who title.
Doctor Two, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, shut up, Boogaloo Shrimp. So, I've been wanting to jump into Doctor Who for years, and I mean, especially the more we've done this, the more people are like, you read Doctor Who? What do you know about Doctor Who? Do you read Doctor Who? And
Why have you wanted to jump into it?
Because I don't know anything about it.
You want to know who Doctor Who was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you see, is it because you also see little things here and there, like, what's this phone box?
The TARDIS? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and like, all I knew is that there was something about time travel and that there were like a whole bunch of different characters that played the Doctor that they don't even look anything alike. And I'm like, I didn't understand what was going on. You know, and Doctor Who's been around for 50 years this year.
God damn.
Yeah.
He doesn't look that old.
Well, I'll
time travel.
I'll get to it. But, you know, the only thing I ever knew about Doctor Who was when I was a little boy, I saw the guy with the curly hair and the hat and the funky scarf. I didn't know what the hell it was. I was a little kid.
I just thought all British people dressed
that way. Like when it was airing on PBS?
Yeah. 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 And
I knew he had a crossover with Star Trek the last couple months.
Well, yeah, but see. So, I mean, I had no fucking clue what this is about. So before any listeners get pissed with me, and British listeners, I don't mean drunk with me, but you should get drunk with me, angry with me. I'm fully admitting my ignorance about any history or knowledge of Doctor Who.
But so this is it. This is you.
This is
jumping right in.
Jumping right in. You know, so here's a breakdown for any of you who are like me, like apparently all you guys, and knew virtually nothing about it. The Doctor is apparently an alien, and he's the last of his species, which the species is called the Time Lords. And one of the biggest things I never knew, which is honestly fucking genius for keeping a series like this going for half a century, is that he's basically immortal, and when his physical body's about to die, he can basically regenerate a new body, which is why he looks different all the time. Because there's actually been 11 different doctors.
It's a clever way to get different actors into the series.
Or if you aren't performing, fuck you, you're fired. Your body's about to die. So this story stars the first doctor, who played the role from 1963 to 1966. And I'm not going to go too much in depth in this story, only because I think the real Doctor Who fans are, they're either already to read this or they're going to pick me apart because I really don't know what I'm talking about on this, and I don't want to do that. But for people like me, I will say this. It's an awesome time travel story that involves giant bugs and a big motherfucking alien villain. So, you know, the art in this book is kind of more of a classic comic book style, where, and I mean that both in the look as well as the layout. And I'll kind of show you guys. I'll pop open. I mean, it's classic panel, you know, looks to it. You don't ever have like the massive, you know, double page spreads where they're hard to follow. They did a nice job with it.
Do they have the robots in that?
No, there's no robots in this.
But my limited knowledge of Doctor Who is the robot creatures that in the Star Trek one that crossover that went with the Borg.
Oh, the metal, or oh my gosh, the metal men.
Cybermen, I think.
Cybermen, yes, yeah. Yes, thank you.
But they have also these little, like, looks like a fucking Danger Will Robinson robot from Lost in Space.
Yeah.
That looks so fucking harmless. Like, I'm, like, thinking you could kick that trash can over. How the fuck is this, like, a scary thing? Oh, my God,
why am I blinking on them? Exterminate, annihilate.
That's
what they say.
Yeah, I don't know. Well,
that's
I mean,
a good impression of a robot.
Yeah, oh, thank you.
Well, they have these. They got these huge fucking beetles in this one that, like, you know, are attacking people. But it's kind of cool though too, because like the doctor is basically a loner always. But yet, while he doesn't necessarily need companions, people are kind of drawn to him. And so he basically takes them along, which I think that's kind of a selfish thing. It's like, hey, guess what? I get to live forever, but come on, I'll fucking waste your life for a while.
I'm going to, not my limited knowledge, I'm going to let the internet beat you up on that, but pretty sure he's not a loner and he needs his companions.
Well, according to what it says in here, is that he doesn't need...
According to this writer's...
But what they're doing, and I'm going to jump ahead... This title is going to be a year-long event.
Okay.
And it's going to feature all 11 doctors.
Hmm.
And so basically what I think they're going to do is one issue per doctor and then probably like a conclusion finale on the 12th issue. You know, so I don't know. I've got a lot to learn.
All right. So the history you just gave out to the listeners, did you gather all that in this first issue?
Pretty much.
God damn.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, there's some good shit in the beginning. It's well set up in the first... Like, there's a very, very brief paragraph where it talks about how he's an alien, uh-huh. You know, on the first page. But then there's, like, somebody who's kind of, like, watching these screens and looking at all the different doctors. And he says something along the lines of how, you know, the doctor doesn't necessarily need people. I'm going to see if I can find it in here. Says he's never alone. You know, talking about the people, he draws them to him. These souls so willing to be led that they follow him into the void. You know, actually it does. I'm sorry, it does say he needs them. So, but yeah. No, so
it also, it's pretty boring if you travel by yourself.
Well, yeah. You know, although the doctor here, you know, even though he's old as fuck, he's got two hot young chicks with him. So good for him. You know.
Yeah, I say the doctor always travels well, at least in the
he's a classy British gentleman.
The recent shows I've seen, Daleks, man, oh my God, fucking Daleks! It just yeah. popped in my head. Daleks, so, those are the bad R2-D2 with chicken pox guys.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm excited to see the rest of this series. So hopefully, I have a little bit better understanding of the character.
I need to understand more about Doctor Who because everyone keeps talking about it, and I feel like I'm a nerd, but I don't know about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, it's, you know, the thing is that this, because there's so much history, it was very daunting. And I've asked people on Twitter and elsewhere, where do you jump in? And people, I'm getting all these different suggestions, so I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to jump in here. It's a great place. Overall, the writing in this is really good, and honestly, the dialogue was exceptional. So, you know, I want to see where this goes. I can hopefully get a better history, and, you know, if this hooks me enough, I'm going to start watching some shows.
Does he bust out the sonic screwdriver?
No.
No. All right. I'll just leave it as that for you.
Yeah. I know nothing, so all but right, cool. But it was cool, and so I think for people like me that are right, scared
man,
to jump
stoked.
In,
I'm stoked that you're reading this.
Jump in now.
All right. Well, something that I jumped into, which is also a blast from the past, Masters of the Universe: The Origin of He-Man.
I have the power.
Actually, that's what I was gonna say. The first fucking page, it has him saying, "I have the," and then the next page, "power," and it's like. Yeah, that's the big He-Man I used to like.
Man.
Well, it's better than him saying, I have the clap.
This was written by Joshua Falkov.
Joshua Hale Falkov?
Yep. And art by Ben Oliver. Colors by Jose Villarubia.
And I'm just going to jump in there and say the colors are gorgeous.
Actually, the art is overall is fantastic.
Well, that's one of the biggest things I want to say. I love this art style, especially for this book, but in general, I could read almost any comic drawn like this.
Yeah.
One of the things that... Alright, talking about this book, I more or less want to overall talk about the overall story of He-Man that they got going on right now. But especially the... You briefly talked about it before.
Origins of Skeletor?
Origin of Skeletor, I feel, was a lot more satisfying reading. This one, it kind of gave you a sense of who He-Man was a little bit beforehand when he was just Prince Adam.
But is this just a one-shot?
Yeah, there's an overall storybook going on.
Okay, because I was going to say, because this felt like the opening credits, because you don't even get the... Like,
well, okay, so...
The title until the very last page.
There was a six-issue miniseries that concluded this week, which was fucking fantastic. I mean, I've talked about it a couple times here. You know, and they had the tie-in for Origin of Skeletor, they had the tie-in for Origin of He-Man. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know, I thought they gave enough... In the six issue miniseries, for me, I still liked the story, but I mean, I was a little confused on some of the stuff. Maybe it's because I read this one as well.
The only big thing that this kind of revealed was where the Sword of Power was hidden behind this tapestry in his parents' room. Like, that was the only thing that kind of was satisfying about reading this one, where, like I said, the Origin of Skeletor, you actually saw how he looked different, how he got picked on, but how his brother still loved him, and how he saved his brother, and how he got corrupted.
Yeah.
That was an overall story arc. This was kind of like Prince Adam being a little pussy and then getting the sword, and
then he's got the power!
Yeah, he took Viagra. Now, as a little tie-in for that, I'm glad you brought this up, Tony, because I did want to mention He-Man and the Masters of the Universe number 6, also from DC, written by Keith Giffen, and art was by Pop Mahan. I think I hope I'm saying his name right. This one has been just a great series overall, and this is where He-Man's got his power back. And I don't know if I filled you guys in, but or for listeners too that didn't read it, Skeletor kind of had a spell put over He-Man and all of his allies where they didn't know who they were, you know, and like you had Man-at-Arms was either working for Evil-Lyn or Skeletor. I don't remember who at this point. I apologize. But now they've all gotten their memories back. He-Man's gotten his power back. And they're all meeting together trying to see who they're going, like how they're going to go attack Skeletor and knock him off his, you know, his high horse. The cool thing in here is that He-Man's saying that he's going to go after him alone because Skeletor won't expect it. And Teela in there is saying, you know, that's dangerous. What if he casts a spell on you again? You know, or as she says it, what if he puts another whammy on you?
No whammy. Stop.
Yeah. He-Man says something, and one of the reasons I was happy about this is because there was one specific character absent from this book. And He-Man mentions it in here, and he goes, as to why he won't be able to do that? He-Man says, Orko's not here to betray us this time.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck, really? But then, so He-Man beats the fuck out of Skeletor in the end of this, and at the end, he's brought back to life by some power, and you don't know who or what it is. All you see is, like, in the chair, kind of like a Dr. Claw type of thing, but the hand with the red, like, red gaping wizard sleeve with the black hand coming out of it seems to me that maybe that's Orko that's resurrecting him. And so, you know, it is going to be continued into another series, which was cool as fuck.
Is it because it says to be continued that you believe that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do believe that.
Story checks out.
Well, one of the things reading this that I find more refreshing as well, I used to love the cartoon. Like, it was really cool. But when I've recently seen
it is not hold up.
It is not a good cartoon at all. It is terribly drawn. It is terribly written. The dialogue in it is just terrible.
What about
terrible.
The one they did on, like, Cartoon Network a few years ago?
You know, I was just talking to our friend, you know, good friend of the show, Chris, on the way up here on my almost 2-hour drive through the wintry blizzard.
A little snowy out there today.
Yeah. So I was talking to him on the way up, and he started telling me about it. He said it was basically like Cartoon Network did like an anime series. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I just found out about it, but he said it was fucking fantastic.
I saw like the first couple episodes of him being Prince Adam and then learning to find the sword and everything, and it was pretty good. I just didn't have a chance to follow it.
Apparently the toys are fucking killer.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them, but...
I just can't say how terrible the 80s cartoon was.
Well,
it's funny to watch. It's actually funny to watch them now. You see the same scenes over and over again. Like, when he's running, it's the same.
It's almost like Scooby-Doo scenes. Type running back and forth.
You know what, though? But I, you know, sorry, Tony. I was rewatching some of the really old Transformers, too.
Fuck you!
How quickly, like,
great.
Here's a problem, and then we'll wrap up the problem in 20 seconds.
You know, the worst thing about this conversation now is, and actually I found it happening when I was reading the issue 6 of He-Man, was, you know, when he says, I have the power, and he starts fighting, in the back of my head during the action sequence, all I could think was, you know, like, that fucking music was playing in my head while I'm reading the damn comic.
Funny, that just thing, that pops in my head randomly all the time. And it's actually not
the... It's like I'm making breakfast. I've got the eggs.
And it's actually...
Taking a shit.
What it is actually, it's not that full-length version where he actually says, I got the power. It's actually the in-between version where it kind of trails off.
So is that like your segue music? Like after you poop, you're pulling up your pants? Like that's coming in?
You know, when I started seeing this, I couldn't help but think of the Dolph Lundgren movie of Masters of the Universe, which I don't care what other people think about it, I still enjoy
that
it.
That was fucking great,
and,
too.
And my favorite part about it is that it didn't matter how He-Man became He-Man. It was just like, we're just jumping right into the middle of this crazy, you know, Skeletor's attacking, and we've been at battle forever. We're just jumping right in the middle of it. And they expected fans to either know what was going on or go along for the ride. And it wasn't until the very end that he says, I have the power!
See, every time I think Dolph Lundgren, all I think is that horrible fucking Punisher movie. and when I think of that, all I think is the last scene where you see him. What are you doing?
From He-Man, it's the Cosmic Key. This is the contraption thing that got them to come to Earth.
You are such a fucking nerd, son.
It's an awesome ringtone.
Yeah, the fact that you already had that as a ringtone.
Well, my audio's going on.
Oh, country nerd at that.
Dude, the only thing I remember from that movie was...
Is his balls hanging down at the end?
No, it was Man-at-Arms getting all hot over a bucket of chicken.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't remember much more than that.
And then it was his daughter,
Tila?
Tila was like, wait, that used to be a living creature? And I'm like, what, they're all vegetarians on Eternia?
Well, no, they eat their meat while it's still living.
All right, moving on. Kevin, what do you got for us?
Well, I got from DC Comics, Minutemen.
Minutemen.
Now, actually,
it's about the revolutionary heroes.
the Patriots.
Yeah.
Now, actually, I've reviewed the first one of this. God, it seemed like a long, long, long time ago, back when we were in the single digits.
Well, it's what, issue 6 now?
6.
Yeah, so it's probably maybe 6 months ago.
Maybe. I don't think it was
5 months ago.
It might have been longer than that, because this was probably like one of the first things I reviewed. It just seems like it's been out a while, and actually, I did not read any of them from that first one up until this. I think this came out last week.
So, okay,
but I read them all in one jam session. I had nothing else to do while in an airport and an airplane, so I just read them all at once.
Wow! Apparently, you're fancy flying all over the country.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. you mean sitting rotting away in an airport terminal? Yes.
Whatever, one percenter. Go hang out with Tony Stark.
He says hi, by the way. Oh, okay. While I was hanging out with him in the airport elite terminal.
Yeah. Yeah. The Avengers wing.
So I read all of these because I felt like after the first issue, I felt the story was, just after the first one, I thought it was going to be such a strong story that I didn't want to be let down after I read the second issue, then having to wait another month, and then another month after. So I just, like... Just a feeling it was going to be one of these series, and I'm happy that was right on that, because this was I've done this in the past. I did this with Secret Invasion, where I read them back, and I quickly lost steam as Secret Invasion. I was going from 1 to 8,
yeah,
because that's how you read.
Well, yeah, we talked okay? about that not too long ago. Yeah.
But this held its way through from beginning to end. Minutemen, if you're not familiar, is basically the team that takes place before Watchmen.
Which is cool, because this is the before Watchmen series.
Yes. Interview's over!
And I like the whole playing with Watchmen, and watches have minutes, and there's...
Is Captain Rolex in there?
So
no, this is like 80s. It's Captain Casio. and he's got a calculator on his chest, yeah, too.
So did anyone have that calculator watch?
I have it on my kitchen table, actually.
Wearing it the other time?
Fucking nerd.
Darwin Cook.
Yes.
Darwin Cook, writer and artist for all six of these bitches.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, what else has he done?
Off the top of my head, I can't say.
Okay, I'll find that somewhere in my...
on the interwebs?
The computer thingy. Phil Noto, colors.
Noto did colors?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that he did colors. I mean, I just know him as an artist.
Now, to be honest with you, I don't know, I can't recall if he did the color for all of these, but considering that everything in this book is so consistent, that it's not like Darwin Cook got, like, lazy in the last few panels. No, it was so consistent that I wouldn't be surprised. Jared Fletcher for lettering, and... but this is a story of the Night Owl, the original Night Owl, Hollis Mason. It takes place in the some of it takes place in the 60s. He's writing a book about his time with the Minutemen from when they formed, and for the couple decades that they were kind of around. And he's going around trying to get everyone's approval, those teammates that are still alive, that he can get the blessing of them to write this book, because he feels that a story needs to be told about this. He doesn't really explain if he's in it for the money or not, but I think he was just wants to explain to America, who was captivated by this team back then, of what happened.
And don't they write that book? That book was written in The Watchmen, right? Like, they talk about him writing the book?
You know, to be honest with you, I can't recall. I'm sure they may have mentioned it, but... I mean, because the Watchmen took place in the mid-late 70s, right?
Yeah,
it's been a long time since I read it, and the movie was just a blur to me.
Yeah,
well, that's probably because you were either drunk or on something.
you're saying that it was the original Night Owl to write this book,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he's going around.
Yeah,
so.
He wrote the tell-all, which a lot of the novel-esque parts of the original Watchmen series were the excerpts from his novel talking about the team and kind of all their, you know, goodness and also bastardliness.
Yeah. So I don't want to spoil any of this, because I think if you I'm sure there's always lots of copies of this hanging on the shelf.
Yeah, I mean, I know at my shop the all those books, I'm already finding issues 1, 2, and 3 in the dollar bins already.
All right.
See,
that's sad, because I mean, because I thought at $4 an issue, they're long reads.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying they aren't worth the $4 by any means. I'm just saying that
you got inventory, you might get rid of them and get turned.
Well, and the ones that are in the dollar bin, don't get me wrong, it's not like they're near mint.
I totally didn't think they could do it before Watchmen series, and then when you picked up that first one we talked about, it, I was like, yeah, I might give it a try. There's some of them I didn't like. Dr. Manhattan, fucking badass.
Yeah, and I read that first one, and that was just a three-parter, and they still haven't... Did they come out with that third one yet?
Is
it four?
I think it's four, and I saw four, I read okay. three.
See, and with Dr. Manhattan, that was definitely another character that really interests me, because he was the one real superhero.
By the way, I just, and this is totally off subject, but I just remembered Darwin Cook, why I remember the name. He did a two-issue, I think it was, miniseries back in the early 2000s, I'm going to say maybe 2003 or 2004, Wolverine and Dupe. He did the art on it. So
So if I wanted to know more about Dupe, that would probably be a place to look. Because I don't
really
know.
They had a team
do you guys up. Joke about Dupe, and I'm just like, and I'm like,
think of Slimer from Ghostbusters, and that pretty much is what you got for Dupe.
With all those wieners in his mouth, or
a Jelly Belly with arms.
Yeah, I like Slimer better, just because.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways,
all right. So Minutemen, it's a great series. Actually, you showed me the art from Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Very
similar in the classic style.
Very similar. The jaw lines are a little bit more rigid than here, but very classic style. I really, really recommend picking up 1 through 6 and just blasting through it on a. Probably get through it about 3-4 hours.
Sweet.
If you, I'm a fucking slow ass reader, so maybe faster from other people. But.
Nice. What are you doing, Matt?
Laughing because of the reasons why Kevin's a slow ass reader. with all the comics that he has, he's probably got to put it down from time to time and use his hands to help him read. In the long box.
I'm showing pictures to people that aren't even there.
All right, I'm going to open this up.
Nice.
Thank you. And that wasn't even a sound effect. That was real life.
Yeah.
All right, I'm opening it up because I know in a moment here, Tony and Derek are going to collide.
It's
going to
get angry.
But I am going to review Superior Spider-Man number 2 by Dan Slott, art by the awesome Ryan Stegman.
You mean the issue where they reveal... And Peter's a ghost.
Colors by Edgar.
Don't get me started, Dick.
And the rest of Marvel's crew. So,
who did letters, by the way?
Letters VC's Chris
Eliopoulos.
Yeah,
by the way,
a fun name to say.
Yeah, I'll come back to Chris at another time. He does some other All cool right. shit on his own.
So first off, we'll continue with the whole. All right, in issue 1. They show Peter Parker, ghost or consciousness, we'll talk about it in a few, following around Dr. Octavius. Well, he's all over this issue trying to say, don't do that, don't do that. And then I like the couple times when he goes, wait a second, wait, that was actually pretty smart. The two girls in Peter's life who know his true identity, Charlie, please.
Carly.
What?
Carly, right?
Carly? I thought it was Carly. Oh, it is Carly, you're right. I put an H in there. Like, girl's name, Charlie, because they sometimes...
Well, sometimes there should be an H in there, like, because you don't want to call it herpes.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a fun disease.
Herpes. I get a little gassy, that's all. Anyways, and Mary Jane...
And some cold sores.
They're talking about how Peter seems to be a little bit different and how it all kind of started from the Doc Ock incident. But MJ starts telling the story of how Peter keeps trying to date her and how he just seems to be acting a little differently. Well, as promised, Superior Spider-Man is doing things much more efficiently and actually doing some pretty badass things as Spider-Man, making little spider bots to patrol the city for him, which ends up saving Mary Jane's life later on.
Yeah, but still kind of slackerish.
Kind of slackers, but to me, I think that's actually a good use of his time and his brilliance.
Well, more efficient, but still kind of lazy.
but he makes good with J. Jonah Jameson, like him saying I might have been wrong about you and you might have been wrong about me.
Well, I like how Jameson's like, I'll be the bigger man and admit it.
Yeah.
Just like, what you dick.
He's such a politician. It's great. But, you know, overall, I'm liking where the story's going, and that they're still building upon these the complexities of this relationship that's happening. Now, one of the things I thought was really funny was Spider-Man goes, it's Crazy Town Banana Pants. And I just started laughing out loud going, really? That's so childish, Peter. And I turned the page, and the first thing Mary Jane says is, it's Crazy Town Banana Pants, and I lost it.
Dude, Slott is a great writer. Yeah. I mean, like, for as much shit as he's caught, because he's ruining people's childhoods, fuck that. You know, he's telling a fantastic story.
I think this is going to be a very memorable moment to reflect back on, and I hope so.
I think Slott has done a great job of explaining how Peter is a ghost. I mean...
All right, We'll get to that. One more thing, because what I really wanted to point out, which was striking to me, is when one of the Autobots, one of Otto's Spider-Bots, saw that there was danger at MJ's nightclub, he rushes over to, you know, investigate. On the way, Ghost Peter is following, and he looks down.
Which,
and goes,
by the way, that fucking panel, that one page splash by Stegman, is one of the best damn pages I've seen in years.
With the Ghost Peter behind MJ and
yes.
Auto Peter, yeah. Or consciousness, Blue Peter.
Behind. Yeah. Oh, wait, yeah. Uncle Ben Kenobi.
Yeah, Uncle Ben. All right, Force Peter. We'll call him
Force Peter.
All right. But the one thing that was really striking to me, and they don't make a big deal about it, which is I kind of like when writers don't do that, but Ghost Peter, Blue Peter, Force Peter, Consciousness Peter, all right, Blue Peter, looks down and says, hey, there's a mugging down there. And he's like, someone is getting mugged. We should. But Otto is like, no, I'm going straight to MJ's. And he gets there just in the nick of time. If he would have stopped to save that mugging victim, MJ would have died. And I'm like, ooh, Peter, are you going to reflect back on that? That, you know, maybe you should be a little bit more focused in on protecting your loved ones? But then there's a really good part where Mary Jane's falling, and you can one shot at this if I can tag her with, and you just hear Force Peter going, not a web line, that'll break her neck. Not a web line, it'll break her neck. And so he does a big netting to catch her, which I thought, hey, great, we're learning from our past mistakes.
Yeah, it's...
So I loved it.
Yeah, it was great. Now, Tony, before we get into the argument, are you 100% certain that he is a ghost?
When have I ever said he's a ghost?
Are you 100% certain?
Yes.
$20?
Okay.
All right, and see, I pull this out, because Tony doesn't like to give up money for anything, so...
Doesn't.
$20. I paid up on my bet to, or dare, I guess, to Matt for snorting the pixie stick. Which, by the way, if you guys ever want to hear somebody snort a pixie stick while we are all thrashed, go back and listen to our interview with Tony Maiello. that's a hell of a lot of fun. But all right, $20, because right in the beginning of it, it actually says Peter Parker's consciousness is buried somewhere within Otto's brain. And he's determined to get his body back. It doesn't say Peter Parker's ghost is following him around like a whiny little bitch named Patrick Swayze.
But what the editor and other people write on the recaps is not what the actual author who writes the dialogue throughout it.
Oh, so what you're saying is that the editor is writing this.
That's a typo. No, that's on the front page.
Oh, that's a typo?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because when he says ghost vomit, he says fucking ghost vomit.
But
and I quote, I'd say kill me, but I'm already dead. Wonder if I can ghost vomit.
Yeah. And I know. When I read that, I fucking laughed out loud because I'm like, God damn it, Tony's going to run with this shit.
That in itself. He says he's dead.
So we'll find out when he gets back.
Ghost vomit.
When he gets back into his body, which it's going to take another 13 issues because I have 15 issues as
what
the.
What did I say?
I think you said like a year.
No, I said like 12 issues or something. Cause I
12
said
issues, yeah.
Half year.
Yeah.
I said 12 issues.
12
and
issues.
And they're coming out by
so 6 months, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Tony agreed on that. So, all right. Well, that's enough on that one, unless we have anything else. But
Slott,
I got 20.
If you want to help Tony win $20, make him a ghost.
Yeah,
just keep him being a ghost.
Just keep him being a ghost. You know what? I do think it is because his midichlorians were off the scale that he's part of the Force now.
Well, yeah. He's Uncle Ben Kenobi. So,
all right, but good read. If you're not following that series, you're not too. It's not too far into it. You can pick up issue number one. You know they're going to make additional printings of it.
Oh, cool! So. Ryan Stegman's on the AR for this.
You mentioned that splash page you were all fucking coming over.
Yeah, there's an AR.
There's an AR for it. I just punched it up real quick to see if it. I don't know that they were gonna do something with it, and apparently an interview with them.
Yeah, Ryan's awesome. So I cannot wait to see him again this May.
All right, pick it up.
Tony, what are we doing?
Kevin, why don't you pull out your long box?
Slowly. Slowly.
Yeah, you don't
want to read it too fast.
Well, and you don't want to scare her with it.
You don't want to have a blue Peter there.
Cheers to that, Tony.
Moving along, long box time.
Oh god. Okay. So I have here. This is from the. It's technically not an Elseworlds book, but...
I love how this review's already going.
Yeah. Oh, no, it is. I missed that part.
It's technically not because I couldn't find the logo, but now it is.
Now it is.
This is why I read slowly, so yeah. I can scan the whole page.
You know what? Tony, in this case, it was a ghost logo.
Snuck up on you. So this is Superman War of the Worlds.
Nice.
So written by Roy Thomas, Michael Lark, art, Willie Schubert, Noel Giddings, as for colors.
And I'm just kind of curious as to
what year was it?
I think
this was 99. And it's funny. In 99, there's a lot of good. Superman and Batman Elseworlds came out.
Is that around the same time Red Sun, or was that early
2000s? It was early 2000s, if I recall correctly. But around the same time that another Superman Elseworlds I reviewed, Speeding Bullets.
Yeah,
is about that around that same time. So now I'm really. Shitty newsflash to you guys about remembering artists and writers' names, but
or what you read.
there's always the forgetfulness of that too.
There's a reason your mom put your name on your underwear so you could remember who you were.
The problem was though is that she wrote it in the back, but Kevin always wanted to read it, so he's putting them on backwards. Look, that's my name.
I was just trying to actually give myself a wedgie and go atomic with it so I could read it. So imagine, if you will, an Elseworld where you have Superman from the 30s.
Fighting the Martians?
Fighting the Martians from Orwell's classic War of the Worlds.
With the big tripods and...
Yeah, exactly.
Now, see, now do you say Orwell, but I always think of Orson Welles.
I forgot that guy's name too. So, that's why you guys
not to be confused with H.G. Wells, but
you guys see that's all why right. You guys are here, man. You guys are my security blanket, my net.
What do you think of it overall? All
right, so you have Superman is not prevalent in this world at all. He's just he was brought up by the Kents. Classic backstory, goes to Metropolis, starts living a normal life, and then you have this alien invasion, and that's his coming out party. And you get an idea of, you know, you have alien versus alien on Earth, and then you have Lex Luthor he's a big catalyst in this big war, because the aliens basically are dumb as shit. But Lex, which is surprising because somehow they got to Earth. but then you have Lex trying to partner with the aliens.
And he makes it smarter
and makes the invasion darn near close to an extermination.
See, and for whatever reason, the way you say it, I'm picturing Mars Attacks Superman. But
that's what I've been thinking. I hope IDW can get the rights to that.
But this is another, just getting back to me gushing about these Elseworlds from this period. This is along those lines. It's a very well done story.
So when you when you whip out your long box, it's instantly firm.
I guess almost.
And he gushes.
I mean, there are a couple of misses in the Elseworld series with the Superman.
I love.
But for the most part, you can't go wrong. And this is another one. But I can't. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil this. Just like Minutemen.
Well, and
they're fine reads, and if you find them, pick them up. They're great.
Well, and apparently your Speeding Bullet is actually somewhat valuable because I know a couple people looked it up on eBay and they couldn't find it for much less than $15.
Damn.
So
I just want to point out I love that the art in this has the really kind of classic Superman look.
The Action Comics number one.
Yeah. Action Comics.
And there's even like a page in there where he's lifted up the car like an Action Comics number one, which I thought was really cool. And then he like catches a mortar shell that was being launched. He catches it and throws it back at a Martian. I'm like, all right, Superman, that's kind of cool.
Nice. All right, well, should we jump into some news and notes?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, news and notes again this week brought to you by Motor City Comic Con, happening May 17th through the 19th at the Suburban Showplace in Novi, Michigan. Check out our favorite little friends there at MotorCityComicCon.com. They released a shitload of names this week of guests that are coming. This show's going to be fucking killer. So, Tony, why don't you kick us off? What do you got?
Well, one of the things, we've been talking about old school franchises and everything, and something that I'm actually looking forward to is the new X-Files series that's coming to IDW.
Yeah.
I have to say, hands down, IDW has some of the greatest licenses known to man on their comic books.
Yeah.
And out of a lot of other, like, not to knock the big two, but honestly, if DC or Marvel were to get some of these,
you mean like Star Wars?
I think they would fuck them up. I honestly think they would fuck up the series.
Because
I feel they are total fanboys and totally understand the source material, and they make the comic books be a total blend of what we grew up with.
Well, you know, I think the great thing about having, you know, some of these, the, you know, IDW having these is that they don't have to try and tie it into another universe. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a major bonus. Also coming out for a licensed property, and this is coming out from Dark Horse, new Tomb Raider series is coming out. If anybody's interested.
Is she going to be grossly unproportionate?
You know, the one picture that I have of which I got this from Comic Book Resources is where I saw this. So you can go look them up. They do have a picture there. It's a beautiful, actually quite realistic drawing. And let me see if I can blow this up for you guys to take a peek. It's kind of fuzzy just because of...
No.
But I mean, it's
she
a very...
anatomically correct.
Yeah, and hot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, that's a bonus. I don't know. I've never been a massive Tomb Raider fan. I mean, I liked playing the first, like, I don't know, maybe three-ish games. So, we'll see. I mean, it might be worth a look.
Yeah. You know? Any of you guys watch the movies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Angelina Jolie, yeah.
Giggity.
Well, those are two new books. Derek, you know about some that are possibly being canceled? Or
before we get into that, there's another new book coming out, which I think this is probably the coolest damn news story that I saw this week, and maybe even the last couple months, was... excuse me. Marvel is releasing a free military-only comic book available at the exchange.
Cool.
And it's basically, I think it's an Avengers-type title, if what I remember is correct. And it's, you know, Thor, Cap, Hawkeye, Hulk, Black Widow. And it's just really cool to me that I think that they're doing this just for the military guys. And while I would love to read it, I think what's even cooler is that those guys have something that's exclusive, it's rare, could potentially be worth money to them down the road. And I hope that they all hold on to them and just pass them down to their kids. You know, because that I just think that's sweet as hell that, you know, Marvel is going, guys, we appreciate what you do. This is just for you. and you only. But you know, it's pretty cool.
Wasn't it back like in World War II, like the people who were reading comic books were either like 12-year-old kids or soldiers.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah,
because I mean they're getting them shipped over now. Apparently, this comic is 5 years in the future. And it is the Avengers, now that I just found the article again. It is the Avengers, and they're fighting Hydra, and, you know, Hydra's almost...
terrorists!
Yeah, and Hydra is on the brink of taking over America. And so...
Is this going to be like the G.I. Joe movie?
Except good.
Okay.
So, you know, I just think it's really cool. I wanted to bring it up. You know, I mean, they say stuff in here like, you know... And this is from the Bayonet.com, by the way. You see Captain America sling his shield, Thor hurl his hammer, and Hulk eat hamburgers. So,
yeah.
I really want to read this story, you know.
You can't, unless you enlist.
Well, you know what? Here's my thought, Marvel. Put it up for sale digitally with all proceeds going to, you know, the Heroes Foundation, or not the Heroes Foundation, but, you know, Wounded Warrior or something like that. I would love to see that. So, okay. Tony, canceled comics.
Yep.
What do you got canceled?
Well, what was it? Winter Soldier?
I think this summer.
Well, you know, Winter Soldier should really be canceled when spring comes.
It should only be a 3 month a year comic. Fucking fantastic, Matt. Cheers to that. The other one is Dark Avengers is canceled as of May. But then again, you know, springtime, there's more light.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Dark Avengers, I loved the Dark Reign Dark Avengers. And I think they're trying to still go off that thing, or like ride that wave. Because I thought that was some really good writing. But I feel like they were just the Thunderbolts. But then we called the Thunderbolts something else, and so we had to call them the Dark Avengers.
And then you had the Defenders.
The Dark Defenders?
Yeah, I don't know.
What about the Offenders?
Oh, I believe that would be us.
All right. Well, I heard Captain Marvel might be on the chopping block.
Which is bullshit. Fuck. I mean, like, why is it that, like, whenever Marvel has a good series with a single female lead... that they can't fucking keep the thing going.
Maybe because overwhelmingly the audience who's read comics books are males.
But you know, the thing is this is getting like awesome critical acclaim everywhere you look. You know, and maybe it's because there's too many fucking X books and Avengers books out there and the market's oversaturated, so you don't get to have those good individual titles.
That might be too.
You know, so I mean.
Or you have an interesting character people want to read.
Have you read Captain Marvel recently? No. Shut the fuck up.
Not since he died from cancer.
You brought it up at least twice.
Oh, yeah. And I mean...
off the shelf.
Every single book has been a winner. I mean, and there have been some that are like... They're just like a B+. But that's pretty awesome when your worst book is a B+.
Yeah. I think I'm really interested with that massive online course about... gender,
yeah.
You know, roles and things in comic books.
Which I hope you guys signed up for.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the...
I don't know. I mean, it's just... I don't know. The one thing, though, I mean, like, and this was, like, some gossip from Bleeding Cool where a lot of this shit's coming from. But, you know,
they admit that a
lot of this is rumor.
Yeah, but...
But, you know, the one thing in here is that they're saying look for, you know, new Marvel products from Dexter Soy, who does the art on Captain Marvel, which I know for a fact he's doing some of the art on Superior Spider-Man. He's doing an arc on that, which I fucking love that guy's art. I'll read whatever book he's drawn. So, that pretty much covers that.
It's a conversation, though, about female comic book characters.
Yeah.
Probably when you're taking that massive online course.
Yeah.
I'm just going to cheat off of you if that's okay.
Well, speaking of massive cheats, this coming week, DC is doing 53 fucking covers for Justice League.
53?
Yeah.
I thought they were the new 52. What's up with 53?
Well, by the way, did you like that segue? it's
kind of silly.
Well, Tony brought this to our attention here, I don't know, maybe a monthish ago, that they're doing a cover with the U.S. flag, and then one for every state.
How long is that?
Plus.
Yeah, I was going to say, every state, that would only make 51 covers.
Plus the District of Columbia, plus Puerto
Rico.
They're
not a state.
I said.
And they're not a state yet.
What did I just say?
Yeah, but they're represented in the Miss America pageant.
Yeah.
Are they
really?
Yeah.
I have not watched Miss America for a while.
I think
thank you for that information, Kevin.
I think both of them
from Atlantic City.
I think both of them have an asterisk on their sash, though.
Okay. The problem that I have with it is that the idea of a variant cover is you get different artists to come in to do different variants.
Right.
And they look completely different, and they're pretty awesome.
Which is why you look for the cover that's pretty badass.
Yeah, you buy the really badass cover, or if that's too expensive, you just buy the normal one because you want to read the book. Unless you're Derek. But
I buy five.
This whole...
Sometimes?
Three, like, it's... It's kind of silly because...
It's gratuitous.
Yeah, but all they're going to do is Photoshop in a new flag.
And that's it.
And the other thing, someone...
But, Matt, honestly, it's only, like, not counting tax, it's only, like, $212 to buy them all.
Yeah, 200... The thing I read on the... I believe it was on the Gutters that I read this, and I love the Gutters, but they were talking about, you know, if you did something like you only would get the covers in your state for your state... I could kind of see then collectors actually have to go out and go make contact with other people, go to different shows. I could see that then becoming a kind of cool thing.
Actually, but, I think, or what if it came with one of your state's quarters?
Give that to Grandpa for his collection.
Then they'd have to charge like $4.25 for it.
Well, no.
$24, sorry.
Well, ooh, have it come with a quarter, and then you can scratch off, you know,
you
the digital
the code.
Yeah.
And there's also a lottery ticket with it. So. And while we're at it, we should just throw in a bucket of chicken.
Yeah. Ooh, better yet, just a bucket of chicken skins, because that's really the best part.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
all
right.
So.
Do you see you got your next thing?
got
Joker faces for you.
Got a little bit of movie news. This one I got from comicbookmovie.com, which was awesome, that The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is shooting in New York, which, mm-hmm. you know, appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, Detroit doesn't look so much like New York these days.
Well, no, but I mean, like, if they did need something on fire, I think that it's already burning.
That's true.
But originally they're, you know, kind of like the whole Blue Harvest, you know, of you know, having your Star Wars movie shooting under a different name so that you're trying to keep it secret. This was originally shooting under the name of London Calling, and now according to this, people caught on to what that is. So now it's just being shot under Untitled Columbia Pictures Project. It's like, well, you guys really thought hard and long on that one.
What is funny is that that's probably the only thing that I haven't called something yet.
So
that's sad. The next one's gonna be Untitled Columbia Project Number 2.
Oh, see, yeah, but see, this is the sequel. So, oh, see, now it's gonna be like First Blood, and then Rambo, and then Rambo First Blood Part, or Rambo 2 First Blood Part 3.
Start renaming them old movies like Casablanca.
Oh, if you don't want people to show up, call it Howard the Duck 2. another little bit of movie news that we got from Variety did a thing on there, and I just thought it was kind of interesting. There's not really a lot to talk about here other than the fact that DC is, I think from what they're hinting at, making sure that Superman, the new Superman movie, does well before they fully green light the Justice League movie.
I find that bullshit. Take the fucking plunge and make a Justice League movie.
The Green Lantern set them so far back.
Actually, though, it wasn't that bad of
a
movie.
Bad movie.
No,
it doesn't matter. I think they were like $100 million in the hole with that movie.
Well,
but they also didn't make that movie thinking that they were working towards Justice League. I think that's what Marvel did right was, hey, we want to make an Avengers movie down the line.
Marvel went,
but let's go with the big three movies and start working them towards a goal as opposed to just, let's just make a movie
and
see how it does.
Yeah, but see, the difference between Marvel and DC in the movies to me is that Marvel has gone full penetration and DC's going just the tip. Nobody's happy with just the tip.
No.
So...
But I read someplace else, too. They asked, they're like movies that, there's a whole list of movies that shouldn't be made or probably won't be made. And of that list of like the top 10 movies of superheroes to make movies, most of them were DC heroes. And I think, you know, and this has always been my bias towards why I'm not a huge fan of DC Comics, but I just always feel that those heroes aren't as relatable.
Exactly.
They're way overpowered. How do you take Wonder Woman, who was actually made by a psychologist with a whole bunch of sex fetishes built into her character, and then make her into like a modern superhero that women can relate to without the fact that, oh my God, she's wearing a bathing suit still?
Like, I was having the conversation, like, incredibly, you know, recent, that my problem with DC, where I have a hard time jumping in, is that they are basically just the new Greek gods. They're all, yeah, like, they're yeah, virtually all gods. I mean, yeah, you have the god of the sea, you know.
Yeah.
You have Zeus, you have Hera, you know.
That's
so
good. Yeah, that's a nice song.
And you can't relate to gods.
So,
yeah, I mean, well, most people can't. I mean, I should be able to.
I can relate to Thor.
So, all right. So I think that does it for news and notes. Mm-hmm. All right, quickly, we got to kind of get some stuff wrapped up here. So we are going to jump right into Indy Turnpike.
We're going to go fast on it, even though there's lots of snow.
Yeah.
And we're drinking.
Yeah. So this week, Indy Turnpike, I picked up Emily and the Strangers, number 1 of 3 from Dark Horse, written by Mariah, I hope I'm saying it right, Huner, and Rob Rieger. Emily, Ivy did the art on this. And this is the first time I've seen this character, and I kind of decided to pick it up out of the blue, but I did find out that there was at least one other miniseries previously called Emily Strange, and I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to pick up the back issues because I did find them. Basically, Emily is a teenage inventor, rocker, scientist, skateboarding little free spirit chick, and she hears about this contest to win the haunted guitar of legendary rock star Professor Kraken. And here, just take a peek in there. So this comic kind of follows her around as she attempts to record a song to win the contest while thwarting her troublesome cats and her overzealous mind. She manages to win the guitar, but at the end has to agree to lead a band. And the reason I wanted to talk about this one is that really, when I picked it up, it's the art that caught me. It's cartoonish and adorable, but it's got a very dark and muted palette to it. But the few splashes of color are necessary and incredibly useful. The other cool thing is that the array of emotions that Ivy can get Emily to project is truly amazing, especially when looking at this style of art. Dialogue's great. I love Emily's curse words, like Zork. Like, you know, this is Zork and stupid. Oh, that's totally Zorked. You know? And it's truly one of the best.
So hipster, not using fuck.
But it's truly one of the best all-ages comics I've ever read. And I say all-ages with a little bit of trepidation, only because it's probably better suited for, like, 10 and up. And normally, books like this, I don't care for. They don't do anything for me. But this was a total breath of fresh air, so different from everything else I've been reading, and it was fantastic. So
I just want to point out that, you know, comic books are littered with advertisements nowadays, and in the middle of this, like, truly the centerfold of the comic book, there is a splash page, whether it's meant to be an advertisement,
well, it's
but it's a really good tie-in with the comic, with the thing. It looks like a concert poster for Emily and the Strangers.
Yeah, and I believe that's actually the variant cover.
Okay, but it's right there in the middle as like a full page.
Yeah, like
it's awesome.
Yeah, like Rolling Stone, you could pull the center out and hang up the picture on your wall. So this is this is great for anybody who ever had, especially like that crazy imagination when you were younger. I know, Tony, you and I have talked about it. You know, you always had those insane scenarios that you play out in your head, and you're like, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to call, and then I'm going to call, the lead singer from this band to come in, and he's going to just come in and sing the song and leave, and then the girl's going to love me, or, you know, all those kind of like scenarios.
Derek, you still have those scenarios.
Well, exactly. So it's perfect for people that used to, or people like me that still do that. So this is the perfect book for you. So,
all right.
Awesome. So, all right. Should we do some booze in a book?
Yep.
All right. Booze in a book this week, Deathmatch number 2 from Boom Studios.
Deathmatch. Sorry, I was thinking of Death Clocks.
This is written by by Paul Jenkins. Art is by Carlos Magno. And I'm pairing this with Cider Boys First Press, which has a 5% alcohol by volume. It's a traditional hard apple cider. And I'm pairing these together because there seems to be a certain stigma about hard ciders, as well as a stigma about superhero comics that aren't from Marvel or DC. And I'm here to tell you, this cider isn't overly sweet. It has a clean finish, and it's just as good as some of my favorite beers that are out there. And Deathmatch, well, Deathmatch isn't just as good as Marvel or DC. It's actually better than most of them. And, you know, honestly, actually, their sales proved it. In fact, the other reason I paired these together was because Deathmatch sold out at the distributor level a few days before cutoff for shipment. And so it's now getting a second print, which is huge for, you know, somebody like Boom Studios to actually be able to do a second print. So I'm saying go out and grab a first print of this book and kick back with a first press hard cider. And I can guarantee you'll have a good day. So that's it for Booze in a Book.
Cool.
You guys got anything for last call?
Still, I always read Avengers books whenever they come out. It's worth reading. We'll talk about it, I'm sure, here in the near future. Also, the Mars Attacks. Robots versus zombies. It's a three-way battle. Interesting. I'm not.
It ain't gay if it's a three-way.
Yeah. I'm not huge on the genre, I suppose, but I kind of liked it. The art was kind of dirty and gritty, which is what you kind of expect for a dystopian, zombie-filled robot attacking world.
Okay.
And there's a Stargate in there for some reason. So,
nice.
Cool.
I got just a couple. Teen Titans number 16. I got to admit, never read Teen Titans before, but I had some awesome conversations on Twitter with some people about it.
You don't read Teen Titans because they're still jailbait.
Well, yeah. And we'll get back to Teen Titans and their awesome masks later. I was confused as fuck, but it was gorgeous art. And it's only because I don't know these characters. Punisher Warzone 4 of 5, where he's still fucking with the Avengers. Great story. The conclusion of Punisher Nightmare 5 of 5. Fantastic fucking book. If you can't find the individual issues when it comes out in trade, pick the whole thing up. And Mara, number 2 from Image, written by Brian Wood, art by Ming Doyle, and colors by Jordi Belair. This is it's a limited series, but it's cool as fuck, so you should be picking this one up, too.
Mine would be Superman 14, 15, and 16, because 16 just came out. This is a story arc called Hell on Earth. It's H apostrophe E-L. So
I think you pronounce that hell.
Yeah,
or Heil?
Heil.
Well, I'm trying to think, like, it's a Kryptonian name. So, like, how, like, you know,
L.
But, so that, and then along with Superboy and Supergirl of the same issues, 14, 15, and 16. This is a big story arc in the Superman world that I've recently picked up and have thoroughly enjoyed.
Nice. Do have two quick shout-outs. Please go check out Motor City Comic Con. We can't wait to get there. That'll be in May. But also, take a peek here a little bit later this week. We've got another podcast coming up for you, our first cross pod with the boys from An Elegant Weapon, Stoner Supreme of the Star Wars universe. And so that will be up sometime later in the week. So keep your eyes out for that. You guys got anything else?
No, I'm good.
I'm good.
All right. Well, I'm Derek.
I'm Matt.
That guy. Kevin.
That guy.
Tony's liver.
All right, guys. On behalf of all of us here at Drunk on Comics, thanks for listening. Keep reading those comics. We'll be back again next week to talk about them then.
Hey, Derek. Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters?
Yeah, for Ghost Peter.
Oh, fuck you. Just